start. One of the challenging and energizing things about the Jewish calendar is that every year you come around to the same place, you say the same things, you have the same experience, and you think to yourself, I did this last year. You know, you sit at Seder night and you say exactly the same words that you said for the last 10 years, for 40 years, 70 years. And yet every year is different. Every year you're a different person. The world's a different place. I'm sure you're familiar with the idea that Jewish history is a spiral. It goes around in circles, but it goes in a direction as well. So that every year you come to a coordinate. You've been there before, and you've been at this exact coordinate, but you're actually now in a different place. So it's that dual sense of being the same and yet different that gives it its power and energy. And therefore, Tisha B'Av to me really feels like that. You know, come on, really? Another Tisha B'Av, doing the same thing, saying the same thing, you know, feeling the same way. And all of the Chagim can feel like this. Sometimes people sit on Yom Kippur and think, well, I'm just doing tshuva for the same stuff I was doing last year and the year before and the year before and the year before. So you have to be able to take that power that actually, no, the world is in a different place. And it draws from this sense of connectedness, that you're not just coming out of nowhere, you're coming through this process. And you might think that's obvious, sitting as young Jewish women, and well, not always as young as others, some younger, some less young, but Jewish women who are, you know, part of an Orthodox world in which a sense of continuity is part of the very air that you breathe. But actually, in the world that we live in today, this is a very unusual thing now. I was listening to a fascinating podcast about explaining the emergence of the new radical young left in America, which is taking over America more quickly than anyone could possibly have imagined. A combination of liberal and Islamic and all sorts of different ideas coming through. And one of the things that was stressed on this part, it was a very interesting analysis, is that these people are coming from a revolutionary mindset, where they want to just burn down everything that came before. They don't feel at all connected with what came before. On the contrary, what came before is somehow flawed and needs to be destroyed. Like all revolutionaries feel that they're coming, you know, completely new. And the people that they're fighting against, meaning the classic American, Western perspective on life that's trying to fight against this, is also completely disconnected from their past. They also don't know where they came from. They also have no sense that, you know, they're part of a continuum. So they don't have a narrative. They don't have a contrary narrative. They don't have a sort of a history. They don't have a sense that they're, no, this is my story and your story is coming again. They don't know where they're coming from. You can see this clearly in the sense that people don't know anything really about their parents and grandparents, and people don't care about their children and grandchildren because they're not having them. Only 25, 30 years ago, 80% of women were having children. Now, 60% of women are having children. And not because of feminism. There were plenty of feminists in the 1980s and 90s as well. Something else has changed. Something has made a radical difference to the sense that people feel completely disconnected from the past and the future, and stuck in a kind of present, which gives them no tools to be able to really defend what they claim to believe in. And actually, Tisha B'Av, it really, if you look to the avoda of the day, what are we trying to do on Tisha B'Av? What we're really trying to do on Tisha B'Av is connect with history and future. The avodas hayom, the work of the day, is to actually understand the sense of where we're coming from, where we're going to. We give those words like galut and ge'ula, but they're not binary things. They're not just we flip from black to white to black to white to black to white. Sometimes people make the mistake of, you know, thinking that, you know, they on Erev Tisha B'Av they say, well, maybe Mashiach will come, we won't have Tisha B'Av tomorrow, if it's kind of just like a light switch which is on and off. The way we have to understand the history and the future is that it runs in lots of different directions, but it can be often quite grey and unclear as we go through the process. And maybe I want to just bring that as another introductory idea, that Zechariah, which we won't be learning today, Zechariah in his visions of the Geula, of the future, he says the days are coming which will be lo yom ve lo laila. They will not be yom, they will not be clear, they will not be bright, but they will not be laila. They will not be night either. And Rashi then, Psukim in Zechariah, explains that they won't be the ultimate Geula at the time of Mashiach. because we won't be there at that point. But they also won't be the time of complete devastation and total exile and subjugation to the non-Jewish world and slavery and concentration camps and things that we've been through all through history. It won't be either of those two things. It'll be something in the middle, this twilight zone, which is very hard to actually orient in. In a sense, when you're living at the top or at the bottom of the process, there's a sense of clarity. But if you're living in the middle of the process, then I don't know, where are we? And a lot of Jewish history has been this lo yom velo laila. When you look at where we are today, and I've said this for years, and I say this even more today, I don't know whether we will look back 25 years from now and say these were the bad old days, or these were the good old days. It's very hard to know. It's very, very hard to know. That's the nature of a twilight. You can't always tell whether it's getting lighter or getting darker. Think historically. You sit and learn Tanakh in the morning. You know, when the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua was, there was a lot of positivity. We're taking the land. We're going to be here. We've been traveling to get here. And then you have hundreds of years of Sefer Shoftim. You sit and learn Sefer Shoftim. So you teach Sefer Shoftim, where people must have been looking around thinking, like, what the heck, what's going on? We're here to do something, to build a temple, and everybody's fighting, and this tribe is fighting against this tribe, and there are civil wars, and Ephraim is fighting against Manasseh, and we end up with leaders like, sometimes it goes well, you know, we have a Gideon, okay, great, that's pretty good. But then we have a Yiftach, who's basically a thug, he's a mafia boss, and you're coming in from the Wild West in a Bashan, in over the other side of the, you know, the Jordan on the north, what's now the Golan and beyond. And he's a thug, you know, and he knows he's a thug, and people also know he's a thug. But okay, that's what we need now. We need a thug to lead the Klal Yisrael and fight our enemies. And we're constantly fighting our enemies. They don't seem to get any peace. And then we end up with a leader like Avimelech. Avimelech, if you learn Sefer Shoftim, Avimelech was a Russia. He's the leader of Klal Yisrael. So what it must have felt like for hundreds of years to be in Sefer Shoftim, I don't know, where are we heading? Eventually we got to David HaMelech. Eventually we got to Shlomo HaMelech. Okay, for a while it was, oh, this is what we've been here. But a lot of that time was, I don't know where we are. And then when you look at how the second temple was rebuilt, people came back. It was, oh, it's very exciting. Koresh gave a decree that all the Jews can go back and they can build a second temple. And oh, this is it. This is the beginning of the Gula. And then nobody came back. Like a handful of people came back. And Zerubbabel, who was the Davidic line to build the new kingdom, most of the people, 80-90% of the people, weren't interested in joining in. And when he got there, it was a mess. It was a real mess for years, for decades and decades and decades. Until you get Nehemiah, who goes from Persia, and he goes over to Eretz Israel, and he tries to rebuild it. And he sees the walls are all broken and they're being attacked from inside and from outside. And it was a real lo yom velo laila. It wasn't just a fly the flag, we went from Golis to Gula. That's not how it works. And therefore, Jewish history is really what we're meant to be dealing with today and understanding today and learning from today and living in this twilight. You know, when you read the Kinnas, and you see the way some things are described. So right now, the way we feel, we say, oh my goodness, we've seen this, you know, destruction and death and children being murdered. We've seen this. And we've had this sense, with this sense of trepidation, this sense of we don't know, you know, where we're headed, the uncertainty. When they're described in the Kinnas, we feel a little bit like that, maybe a lot like that, depending on who you are. On the other hand, at the end of the Kinnas, where it says, Terachem al Tzion, that Hashem will bring back a time when there's Sason v'Simcha in Yerushalayim, and a kav, Zechariah says a kav, a line extending over Yerushalayim to rebuild Yerushalayim. And then you think to yourself, well, actually, that's what we're in as well. That's what we're in. It's gorgeous and the city is growing and there's a kav. What's a kav? A modern day kav is a crane. Go out and look around Yerushalayim and see how many cranes there are. You know, the mayor of Yerushalayim has a sign on his wall from day to day exactly how many cranes there are in Yerushalayim. Moshe Leon, he came to Chappelle's and he sat with us and he talked to us. And he says, I know every single day how many cranes there are in Yerushalayim. Because he sees his project in life as Yerushalayim HaBnuya, to rebuild Yerushalayim. And when he came to Chappelle's, he said, there are 783. And he said, and by September, there'll be 800. And, okay, wow, that is mamash, the projection of the Geula. So what do you make of all that? Very tricky indeed. And therefore, people who walk around saying, basically catastrophizing all the time, saying, oh, it's all terrible and we're all doomed and it's all going wrong and everything's terrible. And I don't think that's a sensible approach to life at all. And it's very depressing and not very helpful to get anything done. And people who go around in this kind of denial that, oh, yeah, everything's great and Am Yisrael and unity and Geula, like, what world do you live in? You have to be able to live in a world which is neither of those worlds. And we're going to talk a little bit, sorry, that was a rather extensive introduction, about how this works. Let's take a look at some of these sources. For those of you who are sort of new here, you've never seen some of these before or may never have them. Some of you who've been here for a while, you've seen some of them. But we have some new sources this year, things we haven't looked at, things we haven't discussed before, which I'm quite excited by. That's why I brought you the extra little sheet, the separate sheet, which I found some new stuff which I didn't get a chance to put into the sources before. Yeah, have a look. We're not going to learn every single source. So if you look at number one, so Chazal want to anchor us in history. Anchor us in history. The Mishnah says, Chamisha dvarim iru ala esavoseinu. Five things happened to our ancestors. On Tisha B'Av, goes through different ta'aniot. Tisha B'Av. But Tisha B'Av nigzal avoseinu shelo yichnesu la'aretz. We were told that we couldn't go into the land. In the desert, we were told that was our future was taken away from us. B'chara v'bais, b'rishoino, b'shnia, the first and second temples were destroyed. B'nilka d'beisar, Betar, the city of Betar was destroyed. The Nechasha Ha'ir and the city was plowed over. That was during the Bar Kokhba revolts. And then the Mishnah ends, Mishnah Nichnas Av. Therefore, when Av comes along, Mema'atim b'simcha. We go down. We bring down the level of simcha because we're connected to the past. By the way, I thought to myself during the laning this morning, some of you most probably didn't hear the laning this morning, but when we lane from Dvarim, the laning is exactly this point, that when you have children and grandchildren and things start going wrong, remember where you came from, remember where you're headed to. It's all about linking, you know, what was in the past and what was in the future. And where do we fit into this? So Chazal addressed this directly, number two in the Yerushalmi. Shalu et Rebbe Eliezer, Dairish Acharonim, Kasherim in Rishonim? Are we any better or are we worse than the people that came before? How do we analyze ourselves? So Amalehem, and he said to them as follows, Eidechem Abachiri Yochichu. So the temple, what happened to the temple will give you your answer. Avoseinu Heviru Esatikra, that our forefathers, who in the first temple time, they blew off the roof. They destroyed the roof. Because there's a posik in Yeshayahu, V'yagel et Masach Yuda. It's the screen came off. Aval Anu, but we. Papanu etakitalim, we blew out the walls, we destroyed the walls. And he quotes from Al Narot Bavel, okay, Ha'omrim, Aru, Aru, Ad Hayisodba. Destroy it down to the very foundations. Now, if you go to that posuk, who is talking there? Edom is talking. It's Edom that's doing this. It's our enemies, it's Rome. Or whoever Edom is, in this case, Rome, that's doing that. But the way that the Chazal put it, isn't it? We did it. We destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. It's not Rome. They were just a kli. They were just the sword, the edge of the weapon that was used to do it. We destroyed the Beis HaMikdash ourselves. And therefore, this Yerushalmi ends. Amru, therefore, we see, Kol Dar She'enu Nivna B'yamav, any generation where the Beis HaMikdash and the restoration of the Geula has not happened in their time, Ma'alin Alav Ki'ilu Hu Hechrivoy. If we haven't seen it rebuilt, we are responsible. We have that responsibility, not in a sense of guilt, but in a sense of obligation, we have that responsibility to change it. And I want to bring you a quote, which I think I bring every year, irrespective of what I'm talking about, but it's a very important quote from Rabbi Sacks, Zichron Livracha. Look at number three. There is, though, one form of outsourcing that tends to be little noticed. The outsourcing of memory. Our computers and smartphones have developed larger and larger memories, from kilobytes to megabytes to gigabytes. In a few years, I'll have to add terabytes to that as well, okay? While our memories and those of our children have got smaller and smaller. In fact, why bother to remember anything these days if you can look it up in a microsecond on Google and Wikipedia? But here I think we made a mistake. We confused history and memory, which are not the same thing at all. History is the answer to the question, what happened? Memory is an answer to the question, who am I? History is about facts. Memory is about identity. History is his story. It happened to someone else, not me. Memory is my story. The past that made me who I am, of whose legacy I am the guardian for the sake of generations yet to come. Without memory, there is no identity, and without identity, we are mere dust on the surface of infinity. So again, he says it beautifully, as he always says everything, which is the idea of connectedness to the past and the future is to give us a sense of who we are, give us a sense of identity. Without a connection with our past and our future, we do not have that identity. That's one of the reasons, by the way, why Torah is called a Morasha. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, Morasha Kehilas Yaakov. It's called a Morasha. What's the difference in a Morasha and a Yerusha? A Yerusha is something that is an inheritance. You get it from your family. You get it from your grandparents. And it's yours. You can do with it whatever you like. That's how most people see history. History led to me, and I can do with whatever I like. A Morasha is something that you inherit from the past, and you have an obligation to give on to the future. It's what you call a heritage, more than an inheritance. Torah and our Torah life is a Morasha. We inherit it from our parents. We give it to our children. Of course, if you're a person that doesn't get the opportunity and the energizing nature of I got it from my parents and I give it to my children, then you see that it's a genetic disease. There are Jews that see exactly what I discussed as a genetic disease. My Judaism, I got it from my parents and I'm going to give it to my children. And of course, they've missed the point there. It's not a genetic disease. It's an enormous opportunity. Okay, so let's get into this issue of machlokes. I want to talk and focus on this today. So look in the Gemara in Yoma. Mikdash Rishon mitnei Macharav. Why was the first temple destroyed? Mitnei Shlosha Dvarim Shehayu Bo. Because there were three major problems going on there. Avodah Zarah, they were worshipping idols. Giloy Arayas, they were behaving in a sexually completely unbounded way. Ushvichas Damim, and there was killing, there was murder going on. Okay, that was the first temple. Mikdash Sheni Shehayu Oiskim B'Torah. Now look how the Gemara describes the second temple. They were Oiskim B'Torah. They were Torah Jews. Uber Mitzvahs, and they were Mitzvah observant. Ugmilas Chasadim, and they were Chesed Jews. They were exactly what you and I would call a frum Jew. Wedded in Torah, mitzvahs, Gmilas Chasadim. Mipnei Ma'acharav, how could it have gone so wrong? Mipnei Shehaisa by Sinas Chinam. So the Bavli says because they were Sinas Chinam, because they weren't able to treat each other correctly, okay? And we'll see what that really means. This teaches you that sinas chinam, this whatever it was, and we'll define it in a minute, is obviously worse than these three terrible averas. Avodah Zarah, Giloy Arayos, Shefichas Damim. And not just worse, but much worse.
One paper?
Not just worse, but much worse, because our first galut was 70 years. And now we've been 2,000 years. I read one of the kinnas this morning. Was talking about like, 900 years we've been sitting without a Beis HaMikdash. Like 900 years. They thought it was like unbelievable compared to 70 years. If you'd have gone back in time and told them when it was only 900 years and one day it'll be 2,000 years, they would have just not believed you at all. But Sinas Chinam, okay, it's obviously much worse. By the way, the Yerushalmi adds in, not just Sinas Chinam, let me quote, I didn't read it on the sheet. Elishahayo, Oyhavim es hamamon. They loved money, v'sonim elu le'elu, but they hated each other, or they rejected each other. The Yerushalmi adds in that they were plenty frum, but they were basically in love with money, and money corrupts people, and money takes people in the wrong direction. And therefore, that was their problem. And you can, by the way, be completely corrupted by money, and still be shomer Torah, shomer mitzvahs, gemulas chasadim, very frum, learning all day, and still have that problem. It's very interesting. So the Yerushalmi adds that in. Over the page, please. So I want to focus on the machlokas angle and look at that for the next 15, 20 minutes or so. So the Gemara in Gittin, these are the Gemaras that we're encouraged to learn on a day like this. Havavu Hanu Biryoni. They were zealots. They were people who believed that we can fight the Romans. We don't need the Romans. You know, we're strong enough on our own. We can defeat anyone we want. And you can work out for yourself who all these people are when mapped on to 2026. I'm not going to make political statements. But you can decide. The people say, we don't need America. We don't need this. We're strong. We're the, you know, whatever. There were these Biryonim. Amru Lahen Rabbanon, and the rabbis said to them, Nepuk Bunavit Shalma Bahadaihu. We have to make peace with the Romans. We have to compromise. We have to make peace with the Romans. But the rebels were the people with the weapons, and they didn't let them. Amru Lahu, and the rebels then said to the rabbis, Nepuk Bunavit Krava Bahadaihu. No, we have to go fight them. We have to kill them. Amru Lahen Rabbanon, and the rabbis said to them, Loi Mistai Milsa. It won't work. You won't win. You can't win. And by the way, don't think that the rabbis were one united group. There were lots of different voices within the rabbinical establishment, and the Gemara talks about that as well, as how they couldn't reach the same point even within each other. V'kamu kalanu lahanu amivri. So what did they do? The rebels set fire to the Amburi Lichiti, to the storehouses of Chiti Vasari, of wheat and barley, meaning they had plenty of food. They had enough food to last in the siege against the Romans for years. They could have just holed up there and said, we'll wait till the Romans get bored and they'll leave us and we'll just carry on. The zealots burned all the food down inside their own city. They burned their own food. Vahavakafna. And now there was a famine. No problem. Please. No problem.
Thank you.
Come in, take a seat.
It took us a while to find it.
Take a piece of floor. Okay. The rebels burned the food because the rebels radicalized the people, because once the people had nothing left to lose, then they'll fight. Because people with nothing to lose fight. Okay, as we see with all sorts of our own enemies who radicalize their own people by leaving them with nothing. So what choice do they have? There's nothing to lose anymore. Fine. So we brought it on ourselves. We burnt our own food down. We shot ourselves, as it were, in the foot. And you can see, if you look in history there were many different groups. There were the Sadducees, and there were the Pharisees, and there were the Essenes. Who were the Essenes? Probably the same as the Dead Sea Scroll people, although not necessarily. Meaning they went off and lived in the desert, and they just gave up. As Yirmiyahu says in the Haftarah this morning, sometimes I feel like I just wish I could go and live in the desert in a little hut and just let the whole thing, you know, go to heck. There were people that did that in the Second Temple. They lived in the desert, the Essenes. The Gemara, or the Maseches Derech Eretz, I should say, which is like a Masechta Katana of the Gemara, explains how dangerous machlokas can be. Number 7. Hay Rebbe Elazar HaKappa Omer. Rebbe Elazar HaKappa said, Avu is a shalom, always love shalom. V'sanu is a machlokas, v'sanu is a machlokas, and reject machlokas. Gadol ha-shalom, how great is shalom? Sha'afilu b'shashi Yisrael oivdim avodah zara. How great is shalom that even when the Jewish people do avodah zara, the yesh shalom beinayhu, there can still be shalom within them. Meaning the problem people are not necessarily the ones doing avodah zara. It's very important. We sometimes draw these lines and say, well, these are obviously the bad guys in Judaism, these are obviously the good guys. And Chazal are telling us again and again and again, that's not true, it's not binary. You can't tell by looking at anybody who are the solution and who are the problem. It could be the frum ones that look frum and do the frum things are part of the problem, and the people who are over there by the Zara, somehow or other, are part of the solution. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ein Ritzoni Ligabahem, I'm not going to touch those people who do Avodah Zarah. I'm going to keep them, I'm going to save them. Shenemar, Chavurat Tzavim Ephraim Chanachloi. Chavurat Tzavim Ephraim. Ephraim are now worshipping idols. They've connected themselves to idols. Chanachloi, leave them. Leave them. It's fine. Leave them. They'll be okay. Aval b'davar machlokas. But when it comes to machlokas, Mahu Omer, what does it say? Chalak libam. Ata yeshamu. Their hearts are chalak. Machlokas means division. Their hearts are divided. Now they'll be desolate. They're gone. They're finished. Hagadol HaShalom, how great is Shalom v'snoi machlokas? Therefore, how great is Shalom and snua ha-machlokas? How much rejected should be machlokas? Ketzad, ir sheyesh b'machlokas, a city where there's machlokas, sofer licharet, it'll be destroyed. V'amru chachamim machlokas b'ir shvichos damim, if there's machlokas in the city, it'll lead to violence. Beis kneset sheyesh b'machlokas, if there's a shul where there's machlokas, sofer licharet, the shul will close down, it'll be destroyed. If there's a home, that there is machlokas in the home, so filicharev, the home, the family will not survive. Shnei bati dinim v'heim bi'ir achas, two different bati dinim, dayanim in the city fighting each other, not in their own communities, but fighting each other. B'nei machlokas, so from the maves, they will end up all going, they will all be destroyed. V'ramu chachamim machlokas, but based in churban ha'olam. So we've seen that machlokas is ultimately what causes the problem. Now, obviously, machlokas doesn't mean we can't disagree with each other. We have to disagree with each other. Jews have always disagreed with each other. We must disagree with each other. Judaism is based on the model of 12 tribes. 12 tribes who do not see the world the same way. We are not looking for uniformity. We are absolutely not looking for that. We just need to find a way, practically, and at the end of the show, I want to give you some real practical takeaways, of actually being able to have positive machlokas without it turning into negative machlokas. Number 8, the Gemara Yerushalmi says, Dorish al David, the door of David HaMelech. Oh, who wouldn't want to live in the time of David HaMelech? Amazing. Kulam tzaddikim hayu. They were tzaddikim, the kind of Jews you really want to be with. But because they had informers informing on each other, they went out to milchama, and they would fall in battle. They would lose battles. How could they lose battles? They were tzaddikim. Why aren't the tzaddikim winning the battles? No, because they didn't have a shalom within them. Aval darish al achav, but the generation of Achav, oivdi avoda zara hayu. There were never people who were so immersed in everything that we feel to be negative. Avoda zara, gilui arayas of the most unbelievable, perverted, possible nature. Nevertheless, al yidei shaloi hayu lahem dilituria, they didn't have that internal division. They would go to war and they'd win. And you look at the world and you say, how come these people who are not religious doing so well and the religious people are not doing well? And the answer is, you're judging on appearances. You're not looking at really what's happening. You're not looking at the inside, which is either the machlokas or not the machlokas. And there's a mitzvah in the Torah, which actually is, we'll see there are a few different ideas on this. But number 9, Banim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem, you are children of God. Lotit godudu. Do not cut yourselves. So on a technical halachic level, lotit godudu is the mitzvah that if a person is extremely anguished and grieving or whatever, they can't cut themselves, cut their skin because they're so upset. You can't cut yourself. But actually Chazal look at this and say, number 10, lotit godudu, lotasu agudot agudot. The word tit godudu sounds like aguda. Aguda is a group. I mean, it could be a good group. Like the aguda, it sets up a group and calls itself the aguda. Or eged. Eged, the bus company, means like sort of the union. But it could be agudot, agudot, factions fighting each other. What has the prohibition of cutting yourself got to do with factionalizing society? And the answer is, because if your right arm cuts your left arm, what does it think it's doing? It's taking revenge, like you're banging a nail, okay? And by mistake, you hit your thumb with a hammer. So your left hand says, how dare you do that? Takes the hammer and then hits the right hand, saying, like, that'll show you. Like, what do you think you're doing? You're just cutting yourself. You're one nation. You fight each other. You're just one body. You're Bani Maten, you're siblings. This idea of being siblings is absolutely crucial. And if you're cutting your sibling, you're just cutting yourself. There are a number of prohibitions of Machlokas in the Torah. One of them is number 11, where it says, don't be like Korach. Don't be like Korach and his men. I brought you here 12, 13, 14, a number of the different mafroshim bring down. This is one of the 613 mitzvot. Look, for example, in number 14. V'lo yiyeh k'korach ka'adasa. This is the Shari Tshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah. Amru Rabbeinu Zichron Livracham kol ha'machsi b'machlokas over belav. Anyone who keeps a machlokas going is breaking a Torah prohibition, which is what? Shnei Ma, v'lo yiyeh k'korach ka'adasa. Maintaining machlokas, where people are fighting other people, is like having pork on your dining room table. Someone brings pork to your Shabbos table and puts it on the table. Having a machlokas in family, in community, is clearly as bad, if not even worse. Now, isn't there such a thing as good machlokas? Yes, there is. But that's where the problems come. Because Korach and his merry men came to Moshe with a religious argument. We don't need you because we're holy. We're all holy. Why do we need leaders? Why do we need a hierarchy? Aren't we all close to God? Isn't every person close to God? That is a religious argument. Now, you can argue whether he was religiously motivated. He just wants to be the leader. You know, all people are equal and some are more equal than others. It's classic Orwell, you know, etc. But at the end of the day, they're presenting, I'm trying to save the Torah. I'm trying to save the Kedusha. That's how he presented it. So we'll see, look on page 3, that there is a distinction between good and bad machlokas, but it's not straightforward. Have a look, please, in source number 15. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, very famous Mishnah, kol machlokas shehi l'shem shamayim, any machlokas which is l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, sofo lehitkayim, it will sustain itself, u'she'ein l'shem shamayim, but if it's not for the sake of heaven, ein sofo lehitkayim, it will not sustain itself. It will end. Ezehi machlokas shehi l'shem shamayim, what is machlokas which is l'shem shamayim? Zomachlokas Hillel v'Shammai. Oh, it brings an example. Hillel and Shammai are the perfect example of a machlokas l'shem Shammai. For the sake of heaven, good machlokas. V'she'enu l'shem Shammai. What is the machlokas she'enu l'shem, which is not for the sake of heaven? Zomachlokas Korach v'kol adasai. That's Korach and his men. Interesting, he doesn't say Korach and Moshe. It says Korach and his men, because even within them, they're all really trying to be the leader. They're all fighting with each other. And by the way, that is one of the great hopes when it comes to revolutionary movements, that the revolutionary movements are often so themselves divided by their own hatred of each other that they manage to destroy themselves before they destroy everybody else. But that you can't always bank on that. Okay? But Korach and his men, that's Machlok L'Shem Shamayim. And the Rav Avadia Mabar Tanura says, in number 16, that the difference between Machlokes L'Shem Shamayim is it's about ideas. Look in number 16. The Machlokes Shi L'Shem Shamayim, HaTachlis, the purpose of that Machlokes, V'Hasayif, and the goal, HaMavukash, which they're looking to try and achieve, Ma'osa Machlokes, L'Hasik HaEmes, is to get to the truth. V'Zemikayim, and that's why it will always go on. K'moshe Amru, because Chazal say, and we see this, Mitoich HaVikuach, Yitbarer HaEmes, because people arguing about ideas and truth, that will never stop, and of course we're always trying to get to a more and more, a clearer and clearer understanding of what the truth is. Of course that will go on, it's about ideas. Like we see with Hillel and Shammai. Halacha ke Beis Hillel, and eventually we'll go like Beis Hillel, but we'll see that in a minute. V'amachlokes she'ein l'shem Shammayim, machlokes which is not for the sake of heaven. Tachlis ha'nitza hu ba, hi bakashat ha'srara. Really people are trying to get one up on other people. The avat ha'nitzuach. They want to win. And machlokas, which is l'shem shamayim, is when I want to be in charge. I want to be the leader. V'zeh asof, eino mikayim. And that goal will never be achieved. Because the one leader will always replace another leader and they'll all be dead. K'moshe metzina b'machlokas korach v'adaso. Shetachlis v'soif kavanaso. Really, their ultimate focus and their ultimate goal. Haitza bakashat ha'kavod. They were really trying to get their own kavod, their own glory and their own honor. The hasrara and leadership and power. And they ended up getting nothing. Of course, when machlokes is about people, then of course it will come to an end, because people come to an end. I remember when I was a small child, you know, you look at all your family as a small child all around, you know, and this great uncle doesn't speak to this great uncle, and this one doesn't talk to this one, and this one's upset with this one, and we don't talk to that side because you don't know what they did to your great uncle Harry in 1955. You don't know, we know, you know, and all. Every family has this. Well, I've got news for you. All these people who didn't talk to each other, none of them talk to anybody anymore. Because they're all under the ground. All gone. It's all finished. No one remembers what great Uncle Harry did to anybody. It's all gone. So what did it achieve? Nothing. I used to have a great aunt who used to dance on the tables at weddings because she used to drink too much wine. And my grandmother, her sister, was very conservative, very, very staid. And she, unbelievable. I was sitting there like a kid watching this, like, unbelievable family dynamic. Great Auntie Hetty.
English woman dancing on the table.
A bottle of wine can do wonders for Englishness. Okay, fine. It'll eventually all ends. Have a look here in Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. So look first of all, Hillel and Shammai. So look at number 17. I'm a Rav Huna. Rav Huna said, "B'shloisha makaymes nechelchu Shammai v'Hillel." How much did Shammai and Hillel, the people who are the paradigm of machlokas, which is good machlokas, how much did they really disagree? Three times. Three times, that's all in the whole of Torah. Three main disagreements. But Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, their students, oy va'avoy. That turned into a disaster. Look in number, first of all, let's go to 19 and then we'll go back to 18. So there was an episode in the past, which I want to talk about for a few minutes, which people don't often think about. It was that day, that terrible day. That day in the attic of Hanani Chizkiyu Ben Gurion, which we'll talk about, of Hanani Ben Chizkiyu Ben Gurion, where everything went horribly wrong. What was that day? So let's situate ourselves in time. We're talking a few decades before the end of the Beis Hamikdash, before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, Second Temple. So look at number 90. Eilu min halachas, there were a group of halachas, she'amru ba'aliyat Hanani Ben Chizkiyu Ben Gurion, that was said in the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkiyah ben Gurion, who was an interesting person, by the way. A lot of important things happened in his attic. His attic was the place, the Chazal say, where they saved the book of Yecheskel on a completely different occasion, where people were worried that the book of Yecheskel was antinomian. It had rules against the Torah. It contradicted with Torah. And they went up to this attic with Hananiah ben Chizkiyah ben Gurion, and they took hundreds of lamps and oil, and they learned through the night for weeks on end, so that they could solve all of the problems and Yecheskel in the Tanakh. So next time you're learning Sefer Yecheskel, you can thank Hananiah ben Chizkiyah ben Gurion that it's still in the Tanakh. Okay, that was a better occasion. This was a worse occasion. They went up into his roof, okay? Because Sha'al al-Bakr, they went to visit him. Nimnu, they counted up. They counted the quorum. V'rabu Beit Shammai al Beit Hillel. And they realized that Beit Shammai were larger than Beit Hillel. They were the majority, which was very unusual. Beit Hillel were normally the majority. And they realized that Beit Shammai, on this particular occasion, the majority. What did they do? Nimnu, v'rabu Beit Shammai al Beit Hillel, shmoina asara davar gazru baba yom. And Beit Shammai pushed through 18 provisions, new legislation of the Sanhedrin, because normally they didn't get the upper hand, normally they weren't the majority, normally they couldn't get their, you know, legislative project through, but they pushed it through because they could. V'haya oisa hayom, and that day, Kasha lahem liYisrael was as tragic for the Jewish people, kiyom shena sebo ha'egel, as the day they made the egel azav. Really, it's so terrible. They shamay was a tamidi chachamim. You know, some of these gezeiras that we still have, most of them, I'm not going to get into a whole analysis of what they all were, but most of them related to very technical things about tumah and tahara. That this is tamei makes you shein in the tumah, rishon the tumah. Very, very technical details on purity and impurity. What was so bad? What was so terrible about this occasion? So now go to number 18. This was one of the issues. The Gemara in Shabbos in the first Perek, that has about six daf of Gemara that goes through these 18 things that were decreed that day and it analyzes them. This is just one of them. Says the Gemara, number 18. Haboitze legat. Somebody who is harvesting for the grape harvest in order to make grape juice, to make wine. They didn't make grape juice, they made wine. Meaning I'm not collecting grapes, I'm making wine. Okay, fine. Shammai omrim, huchshar, the Hillel omru, lo huchshar. That's very interesting. Whether it was Shammai and Hillel or Beit Shammai and Hillel is an interesting debate here. So Shammai here says, huchshar, the juice that squeezes by mistake, and you don't want the juice to squeeze out because every drop of juice counts. You're trying to make wine out of these grapes. But there's a law in Hilchas Tumah and Tahara that if a fruit or a food has never been wet, then it cannot contract Tumah. Once it has become wet, even if it dries off, now it is capable of contracting Tumah going forwards. So Shammai comes along and says that these grapes, even if they become wet from the juice that squeezes out by mistake and you don't want it to squeeze out, that wet is still wet enough. That is the kind of moisture that will make them susceptible to Tumah. Hillel Omer, and Hillel says, lo yochsha, no, it doesn't. That's juice that you don't want there. You don't want to lose juice. You're desperate to keep all the juice you can because you're making wine. Amalo Hillel Shammai. So Hillel says to Shammai, okay, I don't understand. Nitneima boitzrim batara, according to you, why is it that we have to have tahor people to harvest the grape harvest? This is a big expense, by the way. Since Shammai turns around and says that grape juice which accidentally squeezes out of the grapes will make the grapes susceptible to tumah, now you have to hire special people who are not tamei, who definitely are not going to be a problem. It's going to cost a load of money. He says, I don't understand. Why are you particular when it comes to the grape harvest? Ve'ei moiskin batara, but you're not particular when it comes to the olive harvest. Olives you don't mind about. You can have people, even if olive juice squeezes out a little bit. You don't care about that. I don't understand. And he keeps challenging him. So Shammai turns around to his Amole, says to him, Im takni teini, if you keep getting at me like this, goes rani tuma afala masika, then yes, you're right. I'll make it tamei also for the olives. I'll extend it to the olives. Now, you could say he's not just being petulant. He's saying, okay, you know something, if you convince me that olives and grapes are the same as each other, Beis Hillel are trying to say, you don't have to be machmir on the grapes. You shouldn't be strict with the grapes. Beis Shammai is going to turn around and say, well, you know something, if you convince me they're the same, I'll be strict on the olives as well. But then it gets even worse. Natsu cherev beBeis HaMidrash. They put a sword in the middle of the Beis HaMidrash. Amru, and they said, Hanichnas yikanes. If you want to come in, you can come in. The hayotze al yotze, but no one's leaving. No one's allowed to leave. The oisa hayom hayahilel kafuf. And they actually made Hillel, subjugated him. They made him sit and feel like someone who was being sort of picked on. The Yoshev lifnei Shammai, and he had to sit. The Talmidim made him sit in front of Shammai. Ke'echad min ha-Talmidim. They demeaned him. They lowered him. The Hayakash al Yisrael k'yom shenaseh bo ha-egel. And this day, this whole episode of these 18 things became difficult, became tragic for the Jewish people. Hillel was made, it didn't just become a discussion of ideas. It became a discussion of personalities. And Hillel felt that he'd been demeaned and made into a Talmud in front of Shammai. That's how the Talmidim understood it. And if you look just for a second in number 21, that the Yerushalmi goes on and says, Oysa hayom hayakash yisroel kiyom shenasabu ha'egel. What does it mean this day was like the day that they made the egel? Tan Rabbi Yeshua Unia. So Rabbi Yeshua Unia teaches the following. Talmidei Beit Shammai omdu lahem milamata, the Talmidim of Beit Shammai. Now it's Beit Shammai, the Talmidim, stood at the bottom of the stairs. V'hayu horgim b'talmidei Beis Hillel. And they killed, they were murdering the Talmidim of Beis Hillel. Tani, because we learn, shisha mehem alu, six of these soldiers went up. The Hashar Amdu Aleihim, and the others stood guard over them, b'charavot u'b'ramachim, with swords and with spears. Meaning it turned into an actual massacre. Now, there are Mephoshim that want to argue, no, it doesn't mean it literally, it means they were killing each other in Londres, and they were killing each other in arguments, but that's not necessarily how everybody sees it. I want you to look at the separate sheet that I gave you, because I want to introduce you to an interesting fast day that not many people know about. Okay? If you look for a second in what I put here, 19a on page 6, so, there's not page, it's called page 6, it's the single sheet. Yes, you're quite right. Thank you. You're right. I have Av on the mind. I've got Tisha B'Av on my mind, but it actually should be Adar. So, as Rebbe Shurim points out, number 19a, the Shulchan Aruch brings in the laws of fasts, at the very end of the laws of fasts, it brings down a list of fasts that he said there are people that talk about these fasts, but he says the people don't really keep them anymore, but he feels they're important enough, Rav Yosef Karo, to include them in the Shulchan Aruch. I bet you've never heard of most of them. So he says like this, Elu hayamim she'iru behem soros la'avoseinu, these are days the terrible things happened to our fathers, v'roi lehitanot behem, and it's fitting to fast on them, although the Beis Yosef says, I don't know anyone who does, even then in the 1500s. And if you look at those dates, I didn't bring you the whole list, there's like the day that Moshe Rabbeinu died, which actually some people do fast on in Zion Adar, particularly in the Chevra Kedisha, but not for now. The day that Miriam died, the day that Aaron died, the day that the children of Aaron died, there's loads and loads of these fast days that nobody really keeps anymore. And the last one on the list here is Betet Bo, that's Adar, the 9th of Adar, just before Purim, right? The 9th of Adar, we fast, why? Nechluku Beit Shammai u'Bet Hillel. Because Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel had this argument. Well, why are we fasting? Because the argument turned into a massacre. That's why. If you look at the Mephoroshim, look in 19b here, the Levush says, Betetbo, the 9th of Adar, Nechlegu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, Zeh Zeh, V'hoil V'naflu Machloikis Ben Chachmei Yisrael, and since there was such a disagreement, and here's the key words, Afal Pisha Machloikis L'Shem Shamayim Hi. It didn't help that it was L'Shem Shamayim. And they really were L'Shem Shamayim, but it didn't help. So Machlekes Hashem Shamayim is not something that gives you a pass. You don't get a get out of jail card for that. It didn't help. Because Macham Nasis Atera Chasar Lilech Hashtei Torahs. It was dividing the Torah. Shezeh Oysev Ezeh Mata, etc. Look in 19c, Eliyahu Rabba says, he doesn't take it metaphorically, Betet Bo Nechleku, on the 9th of Adar, they had this terrible Machlekes. Venergu Gimel Alofimea Talmidim. 3,000 Talmidim were killed. By each other. 3,000 of the yeshiva bachrim from the Olam HaTorah of the day killed each other on this day. And I brought you actually here, I found in an interesting shir from someone I don't know very much about called Dr. Daniel Roth. I brought you his name at the bottom. He found one of the piyutim from Lezer HaKalir that talks about the brothers and the Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. You can look it in your own time. I brought you the P or the little poem that we don't say most of these poems anymore. There were a lot of them on Tisha B'Av as well. I also brought you a very loose AI translation. I asked Claude to produce a poetic translation of the. Now you can't. Claude can do some nice things as well. Okay, and you can read it and see what you think. I'm not telling you this is how, but it rhymes, which is better than I could have done anyway. But I'm just saying that. Also, I saw last night in the one of the Kinois. Last night talks about the constellations being broken to pieces. And it talks about Gemini being split into two. The brothers that brought the Torah, Moshe and Aaron, who were together, and then the brothers, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, who were split into two. This idea of being split into two is central to what's going on here, and therefore, even if you're L'Shem Shamayim, it won't necessarily help. It might actually be part of the problem rather than part of the solution. Have a look, go back to page 3 for a second, please, and look at number 20. And we'll get to some key ideas here in the last 15 minutes. The end of the temple, number 20. Tana Rabbanon. Masa b'shnei kohanim shehayu shneim shavim. There were two kohanim. The way they used to decide who would be the one who gets the one of the main jobs, you know, bringing the korbanos, is they'd say, okay, we'll have a race, like a friendly race, up the ramp. There was a ramp up to the Mizbeach. And they'd run up the ramp, and whoever got to the top of the ramp first, okay, he would get it, etc. Okay, sounds like a bit of sport, friendly sport in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, for a good cause. So what happened? Masa b'shnei kohanim, there were two kohanim, shehayu shneim shavim. V'ratzim v'olim b'kevesh, and they were running up the ramp. And one of them was running up behind the other and got within his Dalet Amos, okay, within his, you know, very close to him. Not al sakin, so the Kohen drew out a knife. Why exactly he's got a knife in the base of Midrash is a good question. Vataka libo, and he stabbed the other guy to stop him from overtaking him. So now the other guy is now writhing on the floor in his death throes. Ba avim shel tinok, and the father of the tinok, he calls him a tinok. It's interesting, he calls him a tinok. I mean, the guy was a young man, but he calls him a, like, they were little children, basically. Umatsu kishihu mafarper. And he found his son was still twitching. He wasn't dead yet. Amar, and he said, oh, harihu kaparaschem. This has saved us all. This has saved you. This is your kapara. Adayim b'ni mafarper. My son is still twitching. The loin nit masakin, and the knife didn't become tame. Because he would have had a dead body. You would have had a knife, which was tame. You would have, God forbid, you would have had a tame kli in the Beis HaMikdash. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. The knife is not tame. Says the Gemara, Lalamdacha shekasha aleim taras kelim. They were more worried about tuma and tara, yosef eshvichas damim. More than what was really going on. They were talmidei chachamim. They were involved in the minutiae of the halachas. And they were blinded from the reality that the thing was falling apart all around them. And that's, I heard also, I think he was from Rav Herschel Shecht, it was someone, I can't remember, about the idea of the Beis Shammai making 18 new chumras in Tumah and Tara, in the, while everything is, it's like, you know, Lahavdil, Nero is fiddling while Rome is burning, yeah? They're making these, all these chumras in Tumah and Tara, and society is falling apart around you, that's what you do, and Dafka, you find a way to get all the legislation in at the last minute, when you feel you've got the majority to push things through that the people don't want. And if you feel that has any parallel with today's events, then you can think about it further. This is how you treat the system. You abuse the system like that. It can't be. It's a terrible day. Fine. Let's go on to the Netziv. The Netziv says the following. And then we'll look at a little bit of maybe the way forward. Two beautiful pieces from the Netziv, which are essential reading on Tisha B'Av. Number 22. First of all, his introduction to Brachos. To Sefer Brachos, he says as follows. And Netziv was the Rosh Hashiva of Elozhin. Let me sort of situate you in time. Elozhin, of course, is one of the mother yeshivas, the mother of all yeshivas in the modern yeshiva world in Europe in the mid-late 19th century, starting in the early 19th century. And by the Netziv, who was the Rosh Hashiva in the late 19th century, already the project of the new yeshuv was beginning. And people were going back to Eretz Yisrael. The first aliyah had already happened. The Netziv, when he received the first bottle of wine that came from the Karmel winery in Zichron Yaakov, was sent back to Volozhin to him. When he got it, he got this wine. He went upstairs. He got put on his Shabbos clothes. He put on his Shabbos clothes because he says the wine, Jewish wine from Eretz Yisrael, this is like Shabbos, which was amazing. So he was very much part of this, you know, this new idea. He was one of the Chavos Etzion early encouraging that. Number 22. It says, why do we say in Ha'azinu ala pasuk, Hatzur tamim pa'lo? God is the rock. He's tamim. He's just. Sadik v'yasharhu. He is righteous and straight in his ways. The shvach yasharhu. What does it mean that Hashem is straight? Is on the right thing? Ne'ma lahatzdik din HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'churban b'ayshein. This justifies what happened at the end of the second temple. Shehayador ikesh uftaltal. They were a twisted generation. That's the next pasuk in the Hazinu. It was my bar mitzvah sedra, so I remember it a little bit better than other things. Dori keshu fatalta. They were twisted. They were twisted around. Upirashnu. How do we understand this? Shehayut tzadikim. These people were tzadikim. He's getting this from the Gemara. The chasidim. The omelei Torah. They were the olam haTorah. They were learning Torah all day. Achloi hayusharim. But they weren't straight. The halichas olamim. In the way of running the world. Alkein mipnei shinat chinam shebelibam. The sinner that was in their hearts, the rejection for each other, Hashtu et mi sherau shenoik shaloi kedasa biyiras Hashem. Anyone who didn't fit their model of what it was to be a Yorei Shemaim, to be a Frum Jew, shehut stuki. He was a stuki, he was a Sadducee, he was a heretic, the Apikoros. Nobody anymore is right and wrong. People are either you're in my camp or you're an Apikoros. You dress like me, you act like me, you worship Hashem like me, or you're an Apikoros. And this led them to terrible bloodshed, b'derech haflagi, in the most exaggerated way. All these negative things in the world, until the temple was destroyed. That's what we say, tzadik v'yashar hu, she'kodesh baruch hu yashar. Ve'einu soivel tzadikim ka'ele. What a line. Einu soivel tzadikim. Yes, that tzadikim, Hashem can't stand tzadikim like this. Wow. Yeah? Who are the people who is like, they just completely rejected? The tzadikim who behave like this. Not the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, who are in their own world and they don't know what they're doing, okay? Ela ba'ofen shehochim b'derech ha'yashar. Gam b'halich ha'salim. You have to be also yashar in the world. V'loi ba'akmimius. Okay? You can't be twisted. Afagav shehu l'shem shemayim. Even though it's l'shem shemayim. L'shem shemayim doesn't get you out of the problem. It actually makes it worse. Because once you're l'shem shemayim, then you think you're really fighting for God. Everybody thinks they're fighting for God. If you're a secular person, then you say, I don't know anything about God. I'm fighting for this or that. Once you're fighting for God, that's it. Everyone else is an apikoros. And even more striking is number 23, which is his piece. He has a tshuva, which he was one of the more right wing groups in the 1880s, I think, religious groups, not right wing politically, but more religiously, decided they were going to disconnect from the less religious Jews who were part of the Aliyah process. They didn't want anything to do with them anymore. So he says as follows: "B'shah she'ainu ba'aretzeinu hakadosh, when we were in our holy land, u'b'rishuseinu kimat, and when we more or less had some kind of autonomy, b'bayit she'ani, in the second temple, okay, nitam ha'aretz v'charav ha'bayis, everything was destroyed. V'gala Yisrael b'sibas machloikas ha'purushim and ha'tzadukim, because of the machloikas, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, everyone's arguing. We were exiled. V'gam ha'sev machmas sinat chinam harbe, because of the terrible sinat chinam u'shvichas damim, people started killing each other. Mashe'ainu minadim." When a Pharisee, but this was our guys, the Perushim were our guys, who became Chazal, saw someone who was lenient, with a certain issue, they weren't a Stuki clan, they weren't a Sadducee at all, they were just somebody who was, you know, not on their level of whatever they particularly wanted to be. Maybe they just did an Aveira even, maybe they weren't just lenient, maybe they didn't keep that mitzvah. Because of the Sinas Chinam, because of the rejection they had, hayashovta l'tzduki, they would immediately call you a tzduki, shemoridim atoy. And the din of a Sadducee is you can even push them into the lake. The Sadducees, the Sadducim, were people who were destroying the nation. The minute you see someone who's not like you, you call him somebody that basically you can just disregard and even get rid of. U'mizen it's rabbi shvichas damim behetzer. And this is how they ended up killing each other, and they justified it. U'l'shem mitzvah. And then the gossip of the mitzvah batas, and they were all mistaken. Because there ain't rachos when it does. And it's not ridiculous for me to think, he says, in the 1870s. Lahagia chas v'shalom be'eit kazod. We could get to a point, gam kain, asher af al pi, so al pi ros eile echad me'makziki hadat, that one person could look at another person in the way they're religious. Yid mesher ploini einu mitnaig al pi darko, ba'avodis Hashem, and they see this other person is not keeping to their liking the way they serve Hashem. V'shpetenu l'minis, and they can call them a heretic. V'zrachik mimenu, and they can distance from them. V'yud roitvim zeh et zeh beheta, and they'll each be chasing each other to kill each other. Bedin min koizev chas v'shalom. Okay, the shichet kol am Yisrael chalila, and it'll destroy the Jewish people. And look at his last six words: v'zeu afilu im hayinu ba'atzenu urushasenu. And this wouldn't help, even if we were in Israel, even if we had our own independence. It wouldn't help. This problem has to be rooted out before you can get to the solution of the Beis Hamikdash. You know, they asked Zechariah from Bavel, "Do we still have to fast on Tisha B'Av now that they're rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash?" And he writes back. I told you, we talked about this the other week. He writes back and says, are you crazy? You think it's about the Beis HaMikdash? It's not about the Beis HaMikdash. We could build the Beis HaMikdash tomorrow if we don't solve the underlying problems. It'll just be the same old problem as it was before. The Beis HaMikdash will not solve anything at all. Nothing. We're not davening for the Beis HaMikdash. We're davening for the Beis HaMikdash as a part of a system of getting rid of the things that went wrong. In fact, Yirmiyahu says to them in the first Beis HaMikdash, you're constantly saying, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem. You're constantly saying, oh, we have a Beis HaMikdash, nothing can go wrong. No, a Beis HaMikdash can be built, a Beis HaMikdash can be destroyed. If you don't solve the problems, then it won't solve anything. So let's just finish with the last 2 minutes. And let me give you some some suggestions. You can take them or leave them, okay, as to what we might do about this. So first of all, there's no point about talking about unity all the time with one breath, and then with the next breath saying, yeah, but these Haredim or Tzionim or Chilonim are like, you know, what are you living in two different worlds? With one side of your mouth you talk about Jewish unity, and the other side of the mouth you just cause the problems. And people do this all the time. Sinat Chinam, remember, is not baseless hatred. We've talked about that, because that's just, you know, pathological. Nobody hates anyone for no reason. It's rejecting other people. They don't feel like they're your family, okay? Once we reject other Jews, we don't feel we're in the same family as them. So that's a sinat chinam. In my experience, when you're complaining, okay, you can kvetch about the situation in the world and you can work out what needs to be fixed. If your kvetching is about people and it ends with the words, the letters yud mem, the charedim, the chilonim, the tzionim, there's usually a chance that you're overstepping a line once it's about a group of people. If you're talking about behavior and this is wrong and that's wrong, we need to fix this, okay. But just, you know, take it out from the people. Be able to be absolutely committed to change the way of a certain, you know, behavior, at the same time as to embrace the person who you think is behaving badly, not reject them individually. That's very rooted in halacha. We see that, and there's a whole shiur I could give on that, which is not for now. That's one obvious thing. A second obvious thing, we haven't talked about this, is a whole shiur in of itself, and I'm finishing with this minute. Okay? I'm 45 is what I'm finishing? Yeah, good. Okay. Okay, good. Rabbi, nice to see you. Let me tell you about something that I haven't mentioned that I just want to mention at the end here, which is Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. Okay, this is a whole shiur, but I want to mention it as a solution. What does it mean, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh? It means that halachically and hashkafically, every single Jew is responsible for every other Jew. When I do a mitzvah, I didn't fully do a mitzvah. If there's a Jew in the world who I could influence, they didn't do that mitzvah. That's why halachically, I can make Kiddush on Friday night, and I did the mitzvah, and I said all the brachas, and then someone could come in and say, I didn't make Kiddush. Can you make Kiddush for me? I don't know how to make Kiddush. I can make Kiddush again. Even though I say all the brachas again, even though I made Kiddush. If he didn't make Kiddush, she didn't make Kiddush, I didn't make Kiddush. Okay, that's very important. So there's a machloikas in the Gemara there. One of you says, you know something? Every mitzvah you do really is that mitzvah multiplied by 48, because there's 48 different aspects of that mitzvah, multiplied by 613, because of all the mitzvahs, multiplied by 603,550. Okay, because you're responsible for every other Jew, and that's the number of Jewish people. And then Rabbi Yehuda Anasi comes along and says, no, I disagree. I think it's 48 multiplied by 613 multiplied by 603,550 squared. Gemara says, well, what's the difference? This one says like a quadrillion, and this one says a sextillion. Like, it's all crazy numbers. Like, what's the difference? So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says, no. Because not only are you responsible for arvas for every other Jew, that you're responsible for arvas de arvas. Meaning, I'm not only responsible to help every other Jew do their mitzvah, but I'm responsible for ensuring that they fulfill their responsibility to keep help every other Jew do mitzvahs. And I think this is actually very, very important. This is an idea I was thinking about this year, which I want you to think about. Because you and I, what can we do to solve the problem? We don't know every Jew in the world. You say, you're responsible for every Jew in the world. I don't know these people. These people are never going to listen to me. They have nothing to do with me. It's true. But I think Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is saying a very important thing. That in the Jewish world, there's only two stages removed with every Jew in the world. You might not be able to influence every single individual, but I bet you that you can influence somebody that can influence that individual. A leader of that community. Somebody involved in that community. And therefore, I think we really have to, you know, take on what we can do to actually be part of the solution, to be part of actually making it work and to influencing the people that we can influence. And telling the people that, you know, are part of this, that this is how we feel and this is what we're looking for, and ensuring that they at least hear our voice. Parents and children are a very big part of it as well. The idea of that Eliyahu Anavi comes to bring parents and children back together. Parents reconnect with children and children reconnect with parents goes back to where we started. This idea of continuum. And therefore, there are definitely things that we can do. I want to just finish with just one brilliant idea. My wife went to a conference 2 or 3 days ago by someone called Rabbi Menachem Bombach. He runs a school system called Netzach around Israel, which is trying to broaden the curriculum for the Haredi school system to include more, you know, maths and English and other things like that to try and educate the, you know, for the workforce, etc. And the conference was the theme of the conference was the Japanese medieval art of kintsugi. What is the Japanese medieval art of kintsugi? Is that when they had a pot that was smashed, rather than just throw the bits in the garbage, they take the bits of the plate or whatever, and they'd rejoin them together and the cracks by putting gold between the cracks. Okay? So now what you had was a beautiful piece of art, which was worth way more than the original pot was ever worth, where you could see all the cracks. Absolutely, they were enhanced, but they were now enhanced with gold. He said, this is obviously something we can try and achieve. This is the idea of unity without uniformity. We can use the cracks between us and enhance them in some real way, fill them with gold, and actually make that part of the solution rather than part of the problem. Again, easy to say, difficult to do. You have to think about it and how it works. But don't hide behind Torah. And don't let anyone else hide behind Torah. The fact that people are waving a flag that says L'shem Shamayim is this vidgornish helfen, as they say in Chinese. And we have to think about that as we go forwards. Okay, please God, we should have a meaningful fast. And we should all be part of the solution, please God, and not part of the problem.